We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. We're up to the 5th chapter, the 18th Mishnah. Kol hamzakeh et harabim. En chet ba'al yado. Whoever is a source of merits to the masses, so then sin doesn't come his way. He doesn't end up sinning. Bechol hamachtit harabim. But whoever is a source, he causes the masses to sin. So then, en maspikin biyado lasot tshuva. So then, in heaven, they ensure that he will not succeed in repenting. He won't make it back. Moshe zacha v'zikat harabim. Moshe had his own merits, and he also brought many merits to the masses. Zchut harabim talui bo. So then, the merits of the masses are thrown in his favor, as the verse says, "Tzidkat Hashem asa u'mishpatav mi'Yisrael." He did God's righteousness. He brought justice to Israel. So he brought the whole justice system to Israel. Yerovam, we know Yerovam ben Nevat. He brought the Jewish people to idol worship. Chatan, not only he sinned, but ve'echtit harabim. He brought the masses to sin. Chet harabim talui bo. So the sin of the masses is hanging on him. Shneimaz, the verse says, al chatot Yerovam, chatav asher echtit Yisrael. That the temple was ultimately destroyed and the northern 10 tribes were ultimately exiled because of the sins of Yerovam ben Nevat, who sinned and brought the Jewish people to sin. So, the Mishnah seems fairly simple, that when a person does what's right and brings others to do what's right, so then the merits of others are in his name. And when a person helps others do what's right, so then in heaven, they keep him in the right path. So the Mishnah really alludes to many concepts. Number one, the Mishnah says, "Ein chet ba'al yado." Sin doesn't come his way. When a person does what's right and helps others do what's right, so then from heaven they help him do what's right. "Ein chet ba'al yado." This opens really a whole big sugiya, a big discussion about what happens when one sees one's spouse doing what's wrong. Let's take a question that's really extreme. A wife discovers that her husband cheated on her. Do you say that, is there any room to build the marriage after that? So I always say yes.
Doesn't the Torah say that divorce?
If a husband can validate 100% that his wife cheated on him, then there's no way to continue. But most instances, you don't validate it
100%. If a husband cheats on his wife, you can move on, but if a wife cheats on the husband, that's dead.
Correct?
If it's 100%. So, that's witnesses and all that. You have to listen to
it. I'm saying it's
a little sexist.
So that deserves a broad discussion. I mean, that's a fair question. We have to, next Thursday, Bezrat Hashem, we'll have a late night. coming back to the Mishnah, the Mishnah describes when a person does what's right, helps others do what's right, then sin won't come his way. So meaning, and if sin would come his way, you never know if you'll succeed. Meaning, one of the promises you have from heaven is, if you not only do what's right, but help others do what's right, so from heaven they'll help you do what's right. But that means we do need help from above. And when we look at someone else that fell, so then we don't have room to judge them. It's not our job to judge them. I grew up in a community where a very public figure was caught cheating on his wife. And people wouldn't talk to him, and they didn't want to give him aliyas and shul, and I never understood it. What do they want from him? I'm not saying what he did is right. His wife is suffering, and he's suffering, and his daughters were suffering. Everyone's suffering. It's not the community's job to come and take a stance and punish him. What are we judging him for? That's not our job. No one's saying what he did is right, but maybe what the guy repented. Maybe the guy regrets what he did. I'm sure he regrets what he did. When we look at someone else, so firstly, as a stranger, it's not our job to judge them. We can say that's wrong and move on with our life. We don't have to think about what or punish them. We had a horrible story where there were a few kids whose parents separated. the mother didn't get a divorce, and then she started living with another guy. She brought in another guy into the house, and she was living with him. So the kids were growing up with a non-Jewish guy and a Jewish mother, and their mother's obviously living with this guy, and the kids are in the regular Orthodox school, right? So people started going out against this family, and I befriended the kids. Like I was like their big brother, their adoptive big brother. And it was terrible because although what the mother was doing was biblically prohibited, but that doesn't mean that you have a right to punish the kids. So I understand the parents who don't want to send their kids over to that house. That I can understand. But the flip side of it is, you can't kick out a kid from the school because of what the mother did wrong. It's dead wrong what she did. But who am I to judge the kid? But the next step is, what happens between spouses? A wife walks into the room and sees her husband smoking on Shabbos. So now she could say, forget it, you're a faker, what's this all about? A husband walks into the room and sees his wife answering an SMS on Shabbos. So obviously it's devastating, obviously it's wrong. But does that mean, like, so how do we move on from here? So the Mishnah tells us, one of the great gifts, if you're helpful in helping others do good, is that God won't put you to the test. Obviously, and we say it in prayer every morning, what the Mishnah is insinuating is that when put to the test, no one knows how they'll stand up to the test. We say it every morning. Shetatzileni, adamra, mechavera, mishachenra, umipegara, misatana mashchit, midin kashe, umibal din kashe. It says, I shouldn't be put to the val tevienu, lo lidei nisayon, velo lidei vizayon. Don't bring us to test. Why do we ask Hashem, don't bring us to test? Because we never know if we'll stand up to the test. And it's very easy to look at someone else who has the Yetzer Hara, which we don't have, and say, why couldn't they stand up to it? We don't have their challenges. And the Mishnah is insinuating. When the Mishnah says, if you do it, then you won't have sin come to your hand. Well, aren't I responsible to ensure that sin doesn't come to my hand? Yes, I am responsible. And even so, you see, it helps not to be put into that test. So the Mishnah is giving us a deeper understanding. If you do what's right, you get that help and appreciate that help because you never know if you'd stand up to it without it. If we were put to the test, we don't know. Now, how do you deal? So then people need help. I'm not saying that a situation where a wife discovers that her husband cheated on her, she could just say, you know what, I'm going to forgive you, let's move forward. No. There's a problem and it needs to be dealt with. But I don't think the course of action has to be divorce. I think that very often they can figure something out and move forward. And obviously, that's not condoning improper actions. But nonetheless, it's taking a certain approach that says, okay, sin came his way and he didn't stand up to it. I'm sorry that it came his way, but at some level, I can understand that we all don't stand up to our challenges. And now, how do we move forward from that? Give me just a second. Other guys are waiting. Yeah.
Are you saying about catching someone doing something on Shabbos that's not right and you can move on from there? I don't understand how infidelity can be resolved. It's the ultimate in betrayal. It's beyond the pale of anything. If you smoke on Shabbos, it's between you and Hashem, and it can affect the house. But something like this, to say that it's you can or should move on from it, and you should try and work around it. It's not like she came home and she caught him on the computer. He went out and had an affair. He picked himself up, went outside, met someone. It's not like she fell in his lap. I mean, he pursued this. So how do you say he didn't stand up to the test? He actively pursued this. And it's the same thing for a woman who cheats on her husband. It's not a one-step thing.
It can be, right? A person can be late at work and when a person is not careful with the laws of Yichud, this is where I feel Chazal were so realistic. When Chazal said, don't leave yourself alone, Chazal were being realistic. Chazal said, things can happen. And they can happen even if you don't intend for them to happen. enough that it happened once. You know, a guy stayed late at work, the secretary was late at work, and one thing led to another. There can be other scenarios. You know, a guy walks into the house and there's a babysitter there and it's only him and her, and the wife isn't there, and whatever. She needs help with her paper on the computer, and they're sitting close to one another, and whatever. There are a million scenarios where things can happen. I think that when Chazal warned us, when Chazal prohibited Yichud and Chazal prohibited Negiyah, Chazal were being super realistic about how fast a person can fall. I agree that sometimes it's meditated. I agree that sometimes a person continues pursuing his faults and his weaknesses, and what started as a one-time thing then evolved. And again, people fall prey to their desires. When Chazal warned us, Lo tachmod, don't desire, that's Tanakh, it's one of the Ten Commandments. Why is it that the Torah says, don't desire? You're telling me what to desire? Let me desire what I want. Tell me what to do. I can understand. You tell me what to think about. Yes. So, but that's, again, because you're right, things are premeditated. But how many people transgress that premeditation? How many people fantasize? And then people allow themselves to see things they shouldn't see. And then people say, I'll just go one step. And whatever. People end up in the wrong place. Is it right? No, it's wrong. Is it prohibited? Yes. Does he deserve the death penalty at the hands of heaven? Yes. Is he going to pay his tab in heaven? Yes. Does that mean the marriage has to dissolve? No. The marriage can be built. Obviously, they have to do work. Obviously, they have to figure out what went wrong and how do they fix it. And obviously, whichever spouse cheated, the other one is going to be mortally wounded. And that doesn't mean that the marriage can continue the way it was beforehand. They have to figure out how to build on it and fix it. And you know what? Let's view it differently. Let's take a story I know where they had 4 or 5 daughters they had to marry off. He was caught, and it was on the front page of every paper. I mean, everyone made mincemeat out of him. And he was removed from his post. He had a public office. And they decided to continue together. So now, can you imagine the love he has for her now? You could understand how hurt she was, and she decided that she's continuing with him. Now, that relationship can reach heights that it never had before, from his end, and Bezrat Hashem, I hope, from her end too. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's natural. It's something which takes a lot of work, but it's doable. And the flip side of it is that most cases I've seen where the wife came out and said, no way, I can't do this, I'm mortally wounded, she ended up living a life of misery. I'm saying even from her own perspective, it wasn't to her benefit. So she sued him and she got what she wanted and she spent years in court. And even if he collapsed and gave her whatever she wanted, and at the end of the day, what does she have in life? She's the mortally wounded woman who's now going to live the rest of her life alone. The kids are going to split their time between dad and mom, and fine. So I'm not sure, even from an altruistic perspective, I think even from a selfish perspective, I'm not sure she's going to do better going the other route. So there's a time that a woman needs for healing, or a husband. I'm not saying that from day one you go on to day two and you say, okay, we're going to make it work. No. Obviously something drastic happened, and they need drastic measures to figure out how to move on from here. But looking at the whole picture, I think that the people who opted to make it work afterwards very often were able to build beautiful lives, and the people who opted out very often regretted it. Or even if they couldn't bring themselves to regret it, they didn't end up as happy at all. There are scenarios where there are serious problems. There are different reasons behind why such a thing happens, and I'm not saying every situation is rectifiable. There are situations which are not. Part of it depends on the remorse of the spouse. It depends. I'm not saying every situation is rectifiable, but what I am saying is the Mishnah teaches us an important point with the promise sin won't come to his hand. We're accustomed to looking at things, the Jewish perspective is you have free will, so stand up to the challenge. And here we're being shown a different aspect, which is be thankful and try to attain situations where sin doesn't come your way. Because if sin does, you don't know how you'll stand up to it. Okay, there's more to be said, but I think for today that's enough. Yeah.
Oh, I completely forgot what I was going to say.
Okay, if it comes back to tell us. Yeah.
Like the examples you gave were kind of more like instances, like if someone cheated, like I'm assuming like they haven't been cheating for years is maybe like a one-time thing or something. I mean, years would be a bigger issue, but like let's say it's something more like borderline bad, like let's say the husband likes to drink and the wife doesn't approve, or let's say they have a difference on raising children, like the wife or the husband like believe in physical punishment when the kids do something wrong, and the whatever, the other person believes in verbal punishment. How do you deal with that?
I think that that has to be dealt with in a long-term perspective, meaning questions of how to reprimand children are going to come up, if not daily, then weekly. The couple has to figure out what compromise they're amenable to. And they should maybe bring in a third party that they're both amenable to and think what system they're going to set up. Same is true of drinking.
I don't think you set up a system if you think that what the other person is doing is wrong.
So I think two mature adults should be able to find a compromise where they can respect something even if they don't agree with it fully.
What do you mean by a third person?
I'm saying sometimes it can be a rabbi, sometimes it can be a counselor or a therapist. It's very harmful to continue down a course where one is always looking down at the other. Let's take the case he gave of drinking. Let's say the husband likes to go to sleep after taking three beers, and the wife can't stand looking at him drinking a beer. Now he says, I don't get drunk. I just get tired and I go to sleep. And she says, yeah, you don't get drunk, right. You don't know what you're slurring. You don't know what you're saying. Right. If they go to a third party, maybe they'll be able to reach a compromise where maybe the compromise will be that he doesn't drink on weekday nights where he works, and she doesn't say anything when he drinks on a Thursday or a Friday night here in Israel. And whatever. Or maybe the compromise will be that she won't say anything when he drinks his first bottle and he won't go for the second bottle. There are different compromises depending on the couple, depending on the scenario. But a situation where he's constantly doing something that annoys her, she's constantly getting annoyed and he's getting hurt by her annoyance. Yeah, that nothing good's going to come out of that. It, especially on something like this that's recurring. He gave the example of how to reprimand children. You know, that's a big deal. Sometimes people opt out of the argument. And you have scenarios where, I've seen this many times, the husband won't come home until the kids are asleep because he doesn't agree with the way his wife is running the show. So they haven't worked anything out. Marriage builds us both. Through our differences, we're forced to face someone else who disagrees with us. And if we're willing to face and deal and discuss and find out what's right, then we can reach a much better place. But that's much more difficult. What people very often opt to do is run away from the discussion. So I won't come home. You know, you have this all the time. A husband tells his wife, you know, I prefer if you cook the food this way. And the wife says, well, this is how I grew up. So the husband says, no problem. I got to take out place next to work. Did they resolve anything? Or is he starting to lead his life and she's leading her life? You have situations where the wife wants certain things from the husband, and the husband looks for his way out, or the wife looks for her way out. Some compromises are legitimate. Some compromises are really developing separate lives. You have couples that can't agree on where they want to go on vacation. The husband wants to rest, the wife wants action, or vice versa. You have situations where one of the spouses wants an air-conditioned room and the other one wants to be out in nature. So I know couples where all the years they go on separate vacations. It's a very sad story. When he goes to his air-conditioned room, she stays home. And when she goes out to her wilderness, he stays home. I don't know. I think they should have been able to find some kind of compromise. It's very sad. And the fact that it's difficult, well, that's part of the growth, right? We become better people as we contend in our face with someone who is different than us. And that's hard. It's hard to be respectful. It's much easier to sit there and say, oh, you like swatting mosquitoes on your vacation. You enjoy waking up in the morning and looking for an outhouse. Yes, so for me, that's not a vacation. It's very easy to sit on the sidelines and explain why the other person's wrong. That's much easier. That comes naturally. To be respectful and say, you know, I understand that's what you enjoy. I don't particularly enjoy it, but let's find out how we can find something that we'll both enjoy. So that's a much nicer way, and we both grow. We become better people for it. So that's, yeah.
If the person is doing this, at least part of it, he's not going to be tested. So, you know, take it to the extreme, that means that it hasn't been tested, so you can't cure merit for do it for being challenged and overcoming a challenge. So, the converse, is he like given credit for surpassing the challenge that he didn't, that he wasn't given because he wasn't given it because of his own righteousness?
I don't know how merits work in heaven. I don't know. I hear the point. I don't know. I don't know. Sorry, Lloyd. Yeah.
Isn't Hashem always giving us tests constantly during the day? I think the way I understood it was to not ask for specific additional tests. I mean, every day you're going to get your patients tried. You're going to want to stop at someone. You know what I'm saying? It's impossible to be on this earth, you know, unless you're in a coma, you know, and then you contribute to other people's tests. This can't come. This is you or not. Whatever, but that's the only there's no choice in that. The only choice, the classic that comes to mind, I think I learned it here, was Abimelech, yes, right, for the additional tax. And that's, I think, one reason we learned, maybe not. But
yeah.
Regular tests, believe me, there's no way we're not getting plenty of tests. I don't think that's avoidable.
I mean, like, hypothetically, have a. I just imagine that you know one of the tests could be a child like martyrdom. That no one ever in the world would have to go through this test seems almost like that there's like some sort of like revelation of good in people that their capability to climb to that kind of heights of service to Hashem. It's almost like lacking if there was never like a test at all. But maybe that's not the case because in Gan Eden, had we just not eaten from the fruit tree of knowledge of good and evil, that we would have had the long haba right there or something. And so then, well, what about all of these other tests and the variegated forms of challenges that people have overcome and shown that the different manifestations of haba to Shem being certain to God. So while that could have been done with one mitzvah, overcoming that challenge, then maybe it's not it's not necessary, or they're included within a concept. So
I don't know. I don't know. The another point that we see in the Mishnah that people very often overlook within their home is the idea of mizakeh et harabim. Giving other people capacity to get merits. I'll give a small example. You have a guest coming, and you don't want to burden your wife. Your brother's coming to spend the night by you. So you tell her, I'll make the beds, I'll pick up supper. Okay, but imagine a situation where every time mitzvahs come your way, you're always going out of your way to cover every angle of the mitzvah. And then what can happen is that the wife and the kids never get a chance to be a part of the mitzvah. It's very important that you allow other people the opportunity to get a part of the mitzvah. Before I entered the rabbinate, so I made rounds among friends of mine who were already in the rabbinate, and I asked them for advice. And one of the rabbis, who's a rabbi of a very large community here in Jerusalem, he said to me the following line, which initially, I didn't understand. He said, you have to find places where your wife can also play a role in benefiting the public. So I said to him, I don't get it. You have your wife is nonstop benefiting the public. There's nothing you can do without her assistance. You wouldn't be able to accomplish anything without her. What does that mean? So he said, there's the role she's playing, running the house and doing everything behind the scenes, and there are also roles which she has to feel like she's accomplishing in helping the public. When she's taking care of the kids and you're doing all the other work you have to do, that's one aspect. But there's another aspect. She has to feel the satisfaction and the happiness of doing mitzvot other than running the house. And very often, we take that. We try to be a big help, and then we don't give opportunity to our spouses to play a role in performing mitzvot. One of the lessons we learned from Avraham Avinu is that he told the kid, you go get the ox. Now, Yishmael was 13 years old. He just underwent a circumcision also. He also wanted to be in bed. Dad, you have a bunch of servants. What are you asking me for? No, this is a part of being a part of this family. If you're a part of this family, this is what we do. We take in guests. So when guests come, one of the things we have to accustom our children to do is to do achnasat ochim. I learned this from a neighbor of mine. I have a neighbor who's always doing kindness for the whole world. And he has like 15 kids. And if I'm in the store and I'm carrying many bags, so very often he'll tell one of the kids, go take one of the bags for him. If we want to borrow something, he'll send one of the kids with the safer. So the kids are accustomed to this idea of doing kindness. And now I've adopted in my house. If a neighbor calls and says, do you have an extra bag of sugar? So I'll say, just a second, I'll send over one of the kids. Now it becomes a part of the children that doing kindness is part of what they do. If I say, yeah, sure, send one of your kids over, so then they see me doing the act of kindness. They see me giving that bag of sugar, but they had no role in it. If I tell the kid, do you mind bringing the bag up two flights to the neighbor? So I've won twice. Not only did I lend the bag, but the kid has a role in it too. And when he comes back, I tell him, thank you. So I don't have to make a big deal out of it. It's a small deal. But he has the feeling he's a part of it. And very often, we don't think of this aspect. The Talmud tells a story. There was once a prisoner who needed to be redeemed. Pidyon Shvuim, a massive mitzvah to get a Jew out of captivity. One of the biggest mitzvahs we have in the Torah. Chazal say, captivity is worse than being killed, being starved, being tortured, because it encompasses all of them. Because in captivity, they do all of that. They do.
Did they kill you?
In their days, they definitely killed you. And even today, unfortunately, we've had soldiers that were killed too. Yes. So he had this mitzvah, Pidyon Shvuim. So he put up some of the money, but he didn't put up all of the money. So they asked him, why not? So he said, it's not right. I should take the rights to this mitzvah from the public. It's a public mitzvah. So the public is putting together the funds, and I'll give a check for the full amount. I haven't given anyone any opportunity to have a role in this mitzvah. So even though he could afford it, he didn't. He said, you'll need it, come back to me. But first see if other people want part of the mitzvah also. That's an approach that sometimes spouses and parents forget. They mean well, but then they never give the other side an opportunity to play a role in the mitzvahs that they perform. As parents and as spouses, we have to at least give that opportunity. And that's the idea. The Mishnah says, "Hamzakeh tarabim." It doesn't say you do all the mitzvos. You give the merits to the masses. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't only about doing right. He was also about getting others to do right, allowing others to do right, setting up systems where others can do right. And Yeravam ben Nevat, his great falling was not only that he was sinful, his great falling was that he brought others to do wrong. And this again involves thought. It doesn't happen on autopilot. On autopilot, you do what you can, and very often you try to cover whatever you can for your spouse. You figure, let me help. And sometimes it's a mistake. Sometimes your spouse wants that opportunity to do good. I know a person who never lets anyone help him. Unless he's half dead, he won't let people help him. And that's a mistake. When you don't let someone else help you, you don't let them love you. Part of loving a person is that we want to do on their behalf. If we always say, oh, no, don't get me anything, don't do anything for me, we're really not allowing them to connect to us. Sometimes we think we're doing them a favor. There was once a couple where the husband prepared his wife a cup of tea. And she said, no thanks, I'll prepare tea when I want it. So she might have meant, well, Your time is valuable. I don't want you to take off from work. You ended up coming late to work because you prepared me that cup of tea. But the line, don't do me that favor, that's not helpful. Wives will very often say, the way you wash the floor, don't ever wash the floor. I'll ask you if I need you to wash the floor. Okay, maybe. But maybe by saying that, you've done much more than taking the responsibility of washing the floor. You've also said, you're not going to connect with me. I'm not going to let you help me. I'm not going to let you do me that favor. We have to realize that by letting our spouses play a role in our lives and in our mitzvos, that's mizaket arvim, and it also connects us. If we don't let someone else do anything for us, then we're saying, leave me to my own private life. It might be simpler, but it's not a way of connecting to one another. So mizaket arvim, the Mishnah stresses, you're letting other people do what's right. It's harder. It's for sure harder. Very often it's easier to do it ourselves. But that's leading parallel lives. Connection is connecting even in the mitzvahs that we do. So someone else is going to do part of the mitzvah, right? You'll see. Your wives, I wish you that your wives will offer, do you want me to pick that up on the way home from work? Do you want me to get that? And very often our first thought is, no, you're doing so much. Why should I burden you with that? Pause and remember, that's not always the correct answer. Sometimes that's an angle in which she wants to connect. She wants to feel like she's a part of your hectic schedule. She wants to do that. And you're not always doing her a favor by saying no. Sometimes the bigger favor would be, that would be a great help. And is there anything I can do? Sometimes that's much better than just saying, oh, I can manage. Don't worry, I'll get it. So that's the Mishnah we saw today. The Mishnah began by he who brings merits to the masses will not come to the hands of sin. We discussed the idea of sin coming to one's hand and having understanding for one another when we fall. We finished with the idea that he who brings merits to others, this idea that of not hogging the mitzvah, so to speak, allowing others to partake of the mitzvah. And we took that onto a tangent of allowing others to help us, not only in mitzvot, but in general in our lives, which is also a form of connection.